I decided to talk this morning about being a light due to some of the events that have happened in the world lately. We've had some pretty awful things occur, and one of the solutions that's been put forth is people need to return to being more moral, return to God, doing things that God would have them to do, which I totally agree with. The problem is we hear those words said, but we don't see that example put forth by the people that are saying them. And therefore, that message gets very much diluted. And so, I want to talk a little bit this morning about what it means to be a light. I think it's interesting to note that in the passage that Tyler read this morning, it talks about the fact that we are to be a light. It doesn't say a foghorn. A light is something you see, something that you observe, right? It's not something you hear. You see it, you observe it. It draws you towards it, right? That's what a light does. A foghorn gives you an auditory warning, right? Those are two different things. And Jesus wasn't talking about us running our mouths. He was talking about us being good examples. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit this morning. I want to talk about some of the things that a light does. The first thing it does is a light catches the attention of others. You don't see this so much anymore, but when I was a kid, it used to be a big deal that if a new store opened or there was some event, they would bring in a spotlight. And they would shine the spotlight up into the sky at night, and then people would drive to see what was the big deal. They would drive towards the light. I thought that was a great thing as a kid. That was a lot of fun, trying to figure out where the light was, what the light was all about. But it got your attention. That's what a light does, okay? Well, we've got to make sure that we catch the attention of others. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. So 1 Peter 2, verse 9, if you want to turn there. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. A peculiar people. Ron Anderson did more than one sermon about peculiar people. Those always stand out in my mind, his comments about peculiar. We think of peculiar as being odd. But really what peculiar means is being different. And the question is do we stand out as being different? And if we do we stand out as being different for the right reasons? Okay? You know, people should notice and recognize that we talk, we behave, and we treat others differently than the world. That's what they should notice about. You know, we have, over the last few years here, heard more than our fair share of sermons about modesty. But one of the best definitions of modesty is when people look at you, do they remember you for what you wore that day, or do they remember you for how you behaved? Think about that. If someone were to describe you, is it about how you behave, how you act? How you made them feel. That's the kind of peculiar that we're supposed to be. People should notice us because we're kind. We care for others. We're concerned about doing the right thing. We strive always to do the right things, regardless of what the consequences of those are. That's what people should see in us. Do they? I don't know. We each got to think about that, right? But that is what we are supposed to do, to put forth an example to others. You know, a light doesn't shine on itself. Ever thought about that? Think about a spotlight in a play. The spotlight doesn't shine back on the spotlight. The spotlight shines on somebody or something else to make it so that you pay attention to that. That's where your attention is drawn. Not to where the source of the light was, but to the thing that's being lit up. You know, in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 5, Jesus was talking to the Pharisees. And he says, "Thou, when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are," the hypocrites being the Pharisees, "for they love to pray standing in the synagogue and in the corners of the street, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward." Being peculiar doesn't mean we do it to draw attention to ourselves so people realize how good we are. That's not the purpose of it. It's not about us. It's about putting the light on God, putting the light on the gospel, convincing others of the importance of doing God's will. That's what a light does. You know, there is a lot of people in the world who spend an awful lot of time putting the light on themselves. The people I described at the very beginning who want to talk about the fact that we need to be a more godly nation, most of them are standing up doing a lot of talking to get the spotlight on themselves. But their actions sure don't put the light on God. We need to make sure that that's what we're doing. What does our light need to do? Well, going back to what Tyler read, "Let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." The end game is glorifying the Father which is in heaven. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what the end result of our behavior, of our letting our light shine, is meant to be. Not about making a big deal out of ourselves, not about building ourselves up, but putting the focus on God, convincing others that they need to pay attention to the will of God. That's what a light does. Is that what our light's doing? I don't know. Again, each one of us has got to think about that. But that's what a light is supposed to do, one of the things. The other thing that a light does is helps illuminate something that is hidden, something that's hard to see, okay? When I was a kid, my dad had all these old ratty cars that usually had a problem of some sort. And Dad worked on those cars a lot. And my job was to hold the light. It's become a joke in our house because I then turned around and said the same thing to my kids, but more than once I was told, "Shine the light where I can see," because I would get distracted and the light would be over on the wall or something, anywhere but where Dad was trying to work. It wasn't illuminating what was hidden to him. Maybe what was hidden to me, but not what he was aiming for, right? But that's what we use a light for. We use a light to see things that you can't see clearly without it, right? I mean, think about it. You go into the doctor. He gets out that little thingy with the light on it. And he sticks it in your ear. Well, why does he stick that in your ear? Well, it's kind of dark in there. He wants to see what's going on. He needs to illuminate it, right? Or he makes you open your mouth and he sticks it with the little tongue depressor and looks down your throat. He wants to see what's going on down there. It's about illuminating something that is hard to see. That's why we have a plethora of different kinds of flashlights and lights and all these things, right? You know, before we put those three windows in, if you'd have turned the lights off in here on a Sunday, it would have been pretty hard to see. These lights were extremely important because it was dark in here. I wouldn't have been able to read a songbook without it, especially not in my older years here. Maybe when I was younger, but not so much now, right? We need lights to illuminate things. Well, do we illuminate the truth? You know, if you go to Luke chapter 15, Luke chapter 15 and verse 8. Luke 15 verse 8. "Either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doth not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it?" A light helps to find the lost. It helps those that are lost find their way. You know, think about what the concept of a lighthouse is. The concept of a lighthouse was people are out on the seas and they're trying to find their way to port. It's dark. The ocean is vast, it's huge. How do you know where it's the right place to go? They would seek out the light from that lighthouse and then they would follow it. Even if you were lost, you would find that light. Cracks me up because more than once I've mentioned, I am very much directionally challenged. I can get lost and turned around really easy. Don't ever ask me which way is north, south, east, or west. I haven't a clue, okay? Mary Jo tells this story. They had a substitute bus driver who got lost, was running the route, made some wrong turns, got lost, got on the radio. She was panicked. And she's like, I don't know how to get back. And somebody says, do you see the sun? Yep. Drive towards the sun. Keep going towards the sun and you'll eventually get back to where you need to be. Okay? That's what lights do for us. Okay, when we're lost, it's that thing that shines out there that helps us find our way back. Are we that to other people? When somebody is struggling, are we a light that helps them find the way back to where they need to be? Can they look at us and say, you know what? Here's an example of what I need to be. Because that's what a light's supposed to do. That's why it talks about not hiding it under a bushel. Not going to help anybody if it's hidden. It's got to be out there to help guide them when they need help. You know, Romans chapter 1 and verse 16 tells us something that we really need to think about. Romans 1:16 says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Are we ashamed of being a Christian? Does our light get hidden under the basket because we really don't want anybody asking us too many questions? We don't want anybody to really know what it is we believe? Or do we proudly let it shine? So that they ask us questions. So they do try to find out why we live the way we live, behave the way we behave, treat others the way we treat others. We shouldn't be ashamed. That's what Paul is telling the Romans. I'm not ashamed. I'm not the least bit ashamed. And we shouldn't be either. But if we don't let our light shine, what we're saying is we're ashamed to be a Christian. We don't want others to know the way to Christ. Probably the thing we use a light the most for is to illuminate the way. Got headlights on cars, why? Well, that's when we're driving at night, we can find the road. We have street lights, why do we have those? So that night we can see where the street's at. And they're usually at corners, right? So that you can see the street signs, so you know where you should turn, what's the right direction, what's the right place to go. Philippians chapter 3, verse 17 tells us, brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so as ye have for us an example. Do we provide the kind of example that people would want to follow? Because that's the kind of light they need, right? Have you ever seen a car go down the road where the headlights are out of whack and one of them is pointing out over into the trees? That's not where you want to be. Okay? That's not going to help you get to where you want to be or where you need to be, right? Seeing the light over in the trees. Well, which one are we? Are we the light that lights the path to salvation? Or are we the one that's shining over in the trees somewhere that's just going to get you lost? We need to make sure we are the one that illuminates the path. We are a good example. Again, a light is about something that you observe. Do we live our life in a way that others can observe the path to salvation? Or do we just kind of blend in? Or worse yet, are we the light over in the trees that's going to lead them in the wrong, down the wrong path? Help them end up in the wrong place? You know, this is a problem that the exists among religious people. Go over, if you would, to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23. And this kind of describes what I was talking about at the beginning. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 3. He's talking about the Pharisees. Verse 2, he says, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat." And then he says about them, "All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not ye after their works, for they say and do not." They talk a good talk, they talk a good game, but when it comes right down to it, they don't do anything that they say. You know, I found this statement and I thought it was really true and really important for us to remember. This was a quote from Barclay. "In the New Testament, there is no sin more strongly condemned than hypocrisy. And in popular opinion, there is no sin more universally detested." Brian and I were talking a little bit about how could we get people to come to church? How could we get people to be interested in the gospel? And I told him that I felt one of the biggest hurdles we have to overcome is the perception that people have that religious people are hypocrites. Because there's a lot of them out there. You know, the word hypocrite comes from a Greek word that means an actor or a stage player, a pretender, okay? And it means to pretend to be something that you really aren't. To deceive others that you are something you are not. If you get right down to it, it means you're a liar. Well, we know what God thinks of a liar. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19, we're told that these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him: a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Hypocrisy is lying, and God hates lying. It actually came up twice. Two of the seven have to do with lying. God doesn't like a liar, and that's what a hypocrite is. When you say one thing and do another, you're a liar. Well, we don't want to be liars. We don't want God to hate who we are and what we do. But you know what? When we don't do what we say, when our example doesn't match our words, that's what we're doing. And the problem with that is that we can cause others then to be led to sin. Matthew chapter 18, verses 6 and 7 warns us against that. "But who shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses. For it must needs be that offenses come, but woe be to the man by whom the offense cometh." When we're hypocrites, we offend people. We cause people to not listen, to be turned away. We cause people not to become Christians. I truly do believe that one of the hardest things to get people to talk about religion anymore is because there are so many hypocrites out there. And it's so obvious. It's so obvious. We've had the period of the big-time preachers who were all about making money, the Tammy Faye's and Jim Baker's of the world. You know what? That soured some people forever on religion. They're going to give an answer for that. Okay? They're going to give an answer for that. But so are we. When we don't live the way we say that you should live as a Christian, we're being a hypocrite. And if we offend someone by being a hypocrite to the point that they will never obey the gospel, we're going to give an answer. Our light has to be a light towards salvation. We have to live a life that would be in accordance to God's word. We cannot be hypocrites. We have to be very, very careful. You know, right now, it's really easy to turn people off. People like to share their opinions. We've all got them. Somebody said they're like noses. Everybody's got one, right? Lots of opinions. We can have opinions about political things, social things, sports teams, brands of cars. We can have opinions about everything. And in this country, we have a right to have that opinion. But we have to be careful about how we share those opinions. Okay? You know, Jesus was trying to be drawn into a political discussion. The Jews wanted him to say something bad about the Romans. Basically about the fact that the Romans were taxing the Jews. And Jesus told him in Matthew chapter 22, they asked him, "Tell us, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not?" But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why tempt ye me, ye hypocrites? Show me the tribute money." And they brought him a penny, and he said unto them, "Whose is the image and subscription, superscription?" And they said unto him, "Caesar's." Then said he unto them, "Render therefore unto Caesar the thing which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's." Jesus never got drawn into political discussion. That wasn't his purpose. And that shouldn't be our purpose. We can have opinions, but we need to be careful about how we express them. We need to be careful about how we share them. Where we put them and how we put them and how strongly we talk about them. Because you know what? None of that really matters. I've seen some preachers who have gotten wrapped up in things about politics, and they make comments that immediately they've now got half of the people will never listen to them, will never pay them any mind, will never go back and read another article they've ever written. Just like that, they've wiped them out. Is that what the job of a preacher is? I don't think so. Is that what our job is? I don't think so. We're supposed to be a light that brings people to salvation. That needs to be our focus. We can get this off on the wrong track, worried about the wrong things, and then we can be guilty of causing others to focus in the wrong place. Last thing that I've got here is it guides in times of danger. You know, if you go to Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1, we are told as Christians, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." We are supposed to help restore someone who's struggling spiritually. How are we ever going to know if people don't trust us enough to tell us they've got a problem? How can we do that? How can we not be a light and expect people to come to us? If we don't show ourselves as being someone who is focused on salvation, who treats people as God would have them treated, who's concerned about spiritual things in the way in which we've been told to be concerned, why are they going to come to us with a problem? We've got to shine our light such a way that people realize that if I've got a problem, there's where I can go for help. There's somebody who will assist me because they've shown it in their actions, their attitudes, their behaviors. That's what it means to be a light. Is that us? I don't know. Go to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, verse 30. "But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink, and he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt?" Peter was out walking on the water until he looked around and realized things were getting tough. And all of a sudden he lost his faith. Where did he immediately turn to for help? He didn't call back to the boat to the rest of the disciples. Who did he turn to? He turned to Jesus. He turned to the light because he knew that Jesus would help him. He knew that Jesus would do all that he could to save him. When people are struggling, will they turn to us? Are we the kind of light, have we been the kind of light that would cause people to be willing to turn to us to help them out in a difficult time? We should be. Turn into your songbook to number 527. We sing this song fairly often. It's called Let the Lower Lights Be Burning. Brightly beams our Father's mercy from the lighthouse evermore, but unto us he gives the keeping of the lights along the shore. We have a job. Dark the night of sin is settled, loud the angry billows roar. Eager eyes are watching, longing for the lights along the shore. There's those people who are struggling in a world of sin. And they're looking for a light. They're looking for something to help them. Trim your feeble lamp, my brother. Some poor seaman, tempest tossed, trying now to make the harbor, in the darkness may be lost. You know, there are well over 500,000 people in the Des Moines metro area. There's going to be roughly 35 people here this morning. I don't know what 500 million minus 35 is, but it's a big number. That's how many people are lost, are in the darkness. He continues on, let the lower lights be burning, send a gleam across the wave. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save. If our light shines, some of that just shy of 500 million people might see a way out of the trials, tribulations, the troubles that they're facing. That's what our light is supposed to do. Do they see it? Do the people that we interact with, do they see that? Do they see us as that kind of a light? Last point, and then the lesson will be yours. Matthew chapter 25, verses 1 through 13, is the story of the 10 virgins. And we talk about this parable a lot. And we typically focus on the fact that five of the virgins were prepared and five of them were not. And we talk about the importance of being prepared. But I want you to think about this just a little bit differently. All 10 of the virgins started out with lights. All 10 of them. Five kept their lights shining throughout the night, all the way through to the coming of the bridegroom. Five let their lights go out. Think about that for a moment. The five who continued to let their light shine were granted access. Those that continued to be the kind of example that they needed to be were granted access into the wedding feast. The five who let their lights go out were refused access. See a story there? As we go through our life, if our light doesn't shine, which of these groups do we fall into? Are we the ones that are going to be granted access to heaven? Or are we going to be the ones that are standing on the outside looking in? Not granted access. So my question for you this morning is, which best describes you? Does your light shine in the manner in which it's meant to shine? Are you encouraging others? Do others know you're a Christian? Can others follow your example to help them find their way to salvation? Or has your lamp gone out? It's a question each one of us has got to answer. I can't answer it for you, and you can't answer it for me. But it's something we each very much need to think about. How are we living our lives? What kind of an example are we setting? This morning, you've not been a good example. You have an opportunity to change them. Begin living the kind of life that God would have you to live. We're ready to pray for you, to help you, to assist you in that. If you've never obeyed the gospel, you're already on the outside looking in.
You've got no way to get access to the heavens at this point. We're ready and willing to help you with that. If there's anything that we can assist you with, we ask you to come forward while we stand and while we sit.